The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, May the 14th, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. Major protest expected, but Trump's national security advisor calls the U.S. embassy move to Jerusalem a nod to reality. Also on our rundown, can the Senate save net neutrality, and a new report on studying while hungry. Now our top story, as the U.S. Embassy in Israel is set to be moved to Jerusalem today, President Trump's National Security Advisor John Bolton called the controversial decision a recognition of reality. USA Today reports that Bolton said on Sunday that relocating the embassy from Tel Aviv will make it easier to eventually reach a peace agreement. USA Today notes the embassy move has been greeted with anger from Palestinians. Gaza's ruling Hamas movement urged tens of thousands of people to join a protest today to coincide with the embassy opening. Supporters of a free and open internet are making a last-ditch plea to federal lawmakers to save net neutrality. More from Mary Sherman.
The U.S. Senate is expected to vote Wednesday on a Congressional Review Act resolution to block the FCC's repeal of 2015 consumer internet protections, which expire June 11th. Kentucky Attorney General Andy Beshear, who joined more than 20 state attorneys general in a lawsuit challenging the rollback, says net neutrality is good public policy.
I've heard from the people of Kentucky in all walks of life that want to make the free and open internet part of federal law.
Marty Newell with the Rural Broadband Policy Group says the rollback would give unlimited control to four major companies who could slow down or block internet service.
And in rural America, if we're competing against folks that can afford to buy faster lanes or afford to slow us down, then it's not a level playing field.
FCC Chair Ajit Pai called the net neutrality regulations unnecessary and harmful and said a new framework will be established that will encourage innovation and investment and compel broadband providers to disclose their practices.
A University of Maryland poll found the majority of voters of all parties oppose repealing net neutrality. The Trump administration has justified energy projects such as the Keystone XL or Atlantic Coast pipelines, saying they'll create thousands of jobs. But our Eric Tegetoff asks, is this a misleading argument?
Jock Leslie, a frequent contributor to the New York Times who writes about the environment and energy, says advocates for fossil fuels, as well as renewable energy, use job creation to prop up projects or their sector of the market. However, he says these industries don't actually create jobs out of thin air. Most people taking a new job are leaving work somewhere else. In other words, workers are mostly shuffled around the economy. He says the real value of a project comes from a cost-benefit analysis, which should include the effect on the environment.
For energy projects, you also need to take into account what has become known as the social cost of carbon. And that is what has become a number in the cost per ton of carbon dioxide that's emitted by a given project.
Leslie says the social cost of carbon reflects the effects of climate change on the planet. For example, rising sea levels, more intense droughts and floods, and lowered agricultural production as a result. The Obama administration set the price at $45 per ton by 2020. Leslie admits the calculation is hard to determine, but says it's better than setting the cost at zero.
Two of Tennessee's national wildlife refuges are highlighted in a new report. It concerns the use of pesticides on refuge land for agricultural purposes. We get the details from Stephanie Carson.
Both are in West Tennessee. The West Tennessee Refuge Complex and the Tennessee National Wildlife Refuge Complex. The Center for Biological Diversity studied data obtained through public information requests and estimates in 2016, 490,000 pounds of pesticides were used nationwide on farmland within the refuges. Hannah Connor with the center says there's reason to be concerned.
Of the top five that we came up with, two were in Tennessee, and they were using all of these really concerning pesticides for row crop agricultural practices.
Together, the report says more than 38,000 pounds of pesticides were used on the two Tennessee refuges in 2016. They are often used on crops like corn, soybeans, and sorghum. Large-scale farmers who use them say pesticides are the only way they can profitably grow some crops.
The report says that aerial spraying is one of the most common methods of pesticide application for refuges. And finally, studying while hungry. Linda Barr reports many college students struggle to get enough to eat because they lack money to buy food.
At Worcester State University, educators and policymakers floated solutions at the Voices of Hunger conference. Research from Temple University found about a third of university students and almost half of community college students don't have regular access to enough food or a safe place to sleep. Interviewed at the conference, lead researcher Sarah Goldrick-Rabb said instead of profiting off of students, colleges can drive down the price of food and offer students meal vouchers if they can't afford to eat in the cafeteria.
So thinking about the college cafeteria as a place to support college retention, providing grocery scholarships so that students can afford to eat at home as well, and also doing things like helping students connect to public benefits programs.
Another solution is to expand the National School Lunch Program, which serves children all over the country. Now it expires at age 18, but could be extended to cover struggling college students.
One Massachusetts proposal would subsidize student housing for homeless students and those who can't afford to live in dorms. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for newsing and cruising with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported and online at publicnewsservice.org.